may be paying too much. Call the Term Lifeline right now and see if you can save 40%. $500,000 plans and up, that's our specialty. Even great smokers rates. Protect your family today. Call the Term Lifeline right now for a free quote. 866-509-TERM. 866-509-TERM. 866-509-TERM.
A federal district court judge has dismissed a case filed by a former Fox News anchor, and USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has the details.
That judge rejecting wiretapping claims from Andrea Tenteros. She had premised her allegations on malware being placed on her computer, attempts to wipe her BlackBerry device, and the surreptitious recording of women in the wardrobe department of that cable news network. Tenteros alleging the surveillance by the cable news channel occurred after its top executive sexually harassed her. In his ruling, the judge said that Tenteros' complaint was based primarily on speculation and conjecture. Daniels held that Tenteros had not shown that her computer was actually hacked, only that Fox News had the capability to monitor her computer. She also failed, the judge said, to show that Roger Ailes, the late former CEO of the network, had actually monitored her while she was changing clothes. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Some of the first funerals are starting to take place this week in Santa Fe, Texas, for the victims of the school shooting that took place last week. Rome Schubert was shot, but he survived.
I got about 100, 200 feet away from the art room, and I saw some blood on me. No idea I had even been shot. Somebody came up behind me and said, "You've been shot," and I thought it was somebody else's blood.
And finally, it was back on this date in 1881 when the American Red Cross was founded. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Traffic is stuck.
Max Living, brought to you by the Max Challenge of Clinton, New Jersey. Join me, your host, Mark LaRose, every Wednesday at 1 p.m. right here on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. I'll be discussing important health and fitness subjects, featuring guests and success stories. We are here to help motivate you. It's a beautiful day.
All right, it is 3:03, time for Hunterdon Chamber Radio. Weather, it's 77 degrees in Flemington right now, clear skies, no chance of rain today. It's going to be a little different tomorrow, though. Lots of sunshine, high of 79, winds light and variable. Partly cloudy skies with a low of 54. Winds will be light and variable for tonight. Cloudy with occasional rain in the afternoon, thunder possible with a high of 67. Winds light and variable, chance of rain is 90%. Partly cloudy and a stray shower or thunderstorm possible on Wednesday, high of 80. Mainly sunny and high of 81 on Thursday. On Friday the 25th, sunshine and a high near 85. Except for a few afternoon clouds, mainly sunny and a high of 85 on Saturday. Sunday, some thunderstorms might be in the area. And then actual Memorial Day on Monday, chance of rain 30% with a high of 76. Temperatures in our area, we have... Oh, it looks like 77 in Raritan, 76, 79 in Lambertville, 77 in Frenchtown, 75 in Pittstown, 79 in Lebanon, and 77 in Tewksbury. That is Good Morning Hunterdon Hunt Chamber Radio weather.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. visit www.huntertonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programs.
Well, good afternoon. It is Hunter Medical Center on the air, and we have three guests here today from the Hunter Medical Center. Because it's Stroke Awareness Month and it's Emergency Medical Services Week, and so we're going to talk with some folks to give us information and awareness about what happens at our medical center right down the street over there. So we have some three folks. We got Marty Hogan, who is the Director of Mobile Intensive Care. We got Dana DeAngelis, who is the Stroke Coordinator, and Julie Koch, Director of Emergency Department over there at the Hunter Medical Center. Welcome, folks. How are you today?
Very good. Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much for coming on in. So welcome to Hunter Chamber Radio. I know a couple of you are veterans and a few of you are new, but we are here and we're going to talk a little bit about what the medical center, we talk about the medical center every week, but what we're trying to do today is focus specifically on those two items. So why don't we quickly introduce who we have in front of us, so that we can get a little bit of understanding as to who you are and how you are affiliated with the medical center. So, Marty, let's go with you. You're part of the mobile intensive care unit. So how long have you been part of the medical center?
Well, I've been with the medical center since 1986. So I came out to Hunter County with the charge of starting the first paramedic unit in a rural area of New Jersey, and with the support of Walter Fran, the medical center's administration, and the EMS community, we were able to get a program up and running back then. Mm-hmm. We've grown it three times since. We now have four paramedic trucks that we operate 24/7. We cover a pretty large piece of geography in New Jersey, southwest Warren County and all of Hunterdon County. So right. From the tip of Lambertville all the way up to Route 80.
Wow. All the way up to Route 80?
Yep. About 660 square miles.
Why are you so vast? I mean, Hunterdon County was off the geographic map by the time you got past Tewksbury.
Yeah, the area north of Hunterdon County, from Phillipsburg to Washington up to Belvedere, mm-hmm. was the last swath of New Jersey that did not have paramedic coverage.
Okay.
So back in 1995. We worked with the Department of Health and the EMS community at Warren County to add another mobile intensive care unit at that time. Mm-hmm. That then allowed New Jersey to be considered 100% ALS covered, the only state in the nation to accomplish that.
Now, you just threw an acronym at it. What's ALS?
Advanced Life Support, paramedic unit.
All right. Thank you. Because I only know of the other one, so I was trying to figure out how that was working.
Sure.
How has 40 years ago now, starting one unit, now you said you're doing multiple. So what was it like back then to even start something like that?
Well, it was quite an interesting opportunity. In New Jersey, there was five rural counties that did not qualify for paramedic units because of standards that were in place at the time from the Department of Health. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the challenges that we had, was to essentially make a case for the fact that of all the areas of New Jersey, in the rural areas, it would be the best place for a paramedic unit to operate.
Sure.
Because of the distances to the hospital.
Right.
So that's where our relationship with Walter Fran, a former senator, who was able to help us navigate the politics of New Jersey to get the first paramedic unit up and running.
All right. He's dodging bullets already. I also got a history lesson. I've been driving down Walter Fran Boulevard, and I have never understood who he was until you just mentioned it to me. So thank you very much for that.
Sure thing.
Super. So Dana, stroke coordinator, and I told you kind of off air, it's a little unusual to hear that from the outside looking in, but how does one become a stroke coordinator?
Well, I've been at the facility at Hunterdon Medical Center for about a year and a half now. I initially started in our medical surgical units back at another facility,
right.
and growing into neurosciences, saw an interest in stroke. So I decided to dive into that opportunity and be able to take care of patients who are suffering from strokes or cerebral vascular accidents from the moment they come through the emergency department doors, through critical care, and onto our acute rehab facilities as our ultimate goal.
Now, you've been doing this only here for a little while. When did you start your work?
So I've been a nurse for 10 years this mm-hmm. year, but I actually got into the stroke realm about 2012, so okay. going on 6 years right now.
6 years. And I'm going to make a leap here. It's in those 6 years, we have learned a lot more about strokes than we did mm-hmm. probably the 20 years before that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. The guidelines are changing. Actually, they just changed in March of 2018 and again in April. So every month we're keeping up on the new initiatives to sure. provide better stroke care.
Excellent. And then we have Julie. Julie, you're part of the emergency department, and I would say this is probably the place that I've spent most of my time. not a good thing, but
no.
It wasn't me, actually. I was visiting a lot more people. But I'm going to start off right off the bat because it's not the place you want to be, but when we have been there, it's been excellent every time.
Well, that's really, really good to hear. I was recently named director of the emergency department. It's like almost a year now, so not so recent. In June of last year,
mm-hmm.
I've been at the hospital for 33 years.
Wow! Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Started off in intensive care inside the hospital, not the mobile, and worked there for 25 years. Then I was a nursing supervisor,
right?
And then became I made a leap to the emergency department and kind of took on another specialty.
Sure.
And became director in June. So we're really excited about the kind of care that we're giving for our stroke patients, for all of our patients, because we are making some changes. But the stroke program is very exciting, and between Marty, myself, our director of medical services, Ed Spector is the medical director of Pegasus, and Dana, along with the rest of the hospital team, to do the best we can for our stroke patients.
Super. So we're focusing first on the stroke awareness. Now, it's not lost on me that the three of you interact with the potential stroke patient at different points in time in the cycle, if that's the right word to use. So what I'm going to do is I'm kind of going to ask you, kind of in the chronological order, where you jump in. So I would imagine, Marty, that at some point somebody might have experienced some type of symptoms, and they've called for paramedics, and you show up, or your group shows up. What is the things that take place when a paramedic shows up to start helping a stroke victim?
Sure. If you don't mind, let me just digress for a moment and
digress.
Give you the idea how it is that we even get invited to the party, so to say.
All right.
In this nation, in Hunterdon County, and Hunterdon County was one of the first county dispatch centers to develop themselves as a countywide asset, mm-hmm. to where they dispatch all police, fire, and EMS from right. one location. At pre-911, and then once 911 came along, Hunterdon County was well ahead of that curve.
Sure.
Callers call into 911 today, and they state their emergency to the dispatcher. And in that conversation, usually 3 to 5 quick questions, the dispatcher has a fairly good understanding of, you know, that this is a potential stroke patient that they're going to be dealing with.
Okay.
So while the call taker continues to engage the caller, they push the information from one computer screen to the other, and the dispatcher now starts actually requesting services in the form of a police, an EMS, local EMS, local rescue squad, mm-hmm. and a paramedic unit. So at that point, that's what gets everybody responding to the call.
Right.
So on our initial arrival, more often than not, the police are on scene first because they are in the locale for most communities.
Mm-hmm.
And the squad may or may not be there, but typically they are, and then we come onto the scene. So our first thing is just to get a quick report from whoever arrived ahead of us, just to find out, you know, what happened, how they found the patient, and what they may have done to intervene in the moments in between.
Right.
Once we have the idea or the thought that, you know, that it's stroke or we're thinking stroke, you know, we then want to start doing a neurological assessment. So we want to just quickly clear out the ABCs to make sure the patient's vital functions are in a stable capacity. And once we have that comfort level, we then start to go into assessing the patient using an acronym called BFAST. So it's basically balance, you know,
eyes,
thank you, facial symmetry, I'm blanking out here,
arms,
okay, for, you know, symmetry and drift.
Yes.
Their speech, and then the time that the event started, or their last known well. And those are the, you know, kind of like a just a thumbnail of what you're trying to get as just an overview of what's going on.
Sure.
Ultimately, what we do as the in the field, from the field, will use a cell phone to call to the emergency room physician at Hunter Medical Center and discuss the case, you know, with that physician and make a determination about whether or not, you know, we all believe this to be a stroke. Mm-hmm. And at that point, we do something called a pre-hospital stroke alert. So we're notifying the emergency room that, you know, there's an inbound stroke. We give them a guesstimate of transport time. Then that gives the emergency department and Dana and her team, you know, the opportunity to get, you know, geared up for the arrival of this patient. In the meantime, we execute a care plan, providing oxygen, IV therapy, draw bloods, check a blood sugar, and continue to reassess the patient to see, one, if they continue to devolve and their stroke, you know, worsens, or whether the symptoms clear up some. Because it's not uncommon for us to see somebody in the throes of a stroke, and then by the time we get them to the hospital, they've recovered some of those symptoms and are presenting in a much, you know, milder fashion. So it's great for us to be able to be there to, you know, document it and also witness it, so we can bring more clarity to the subsequent care to come.
Sure. Dana, is there some things that before the paramedics get there that can be done nowadays to stabilize an individual that somebody at home could help with, or is it pretty much best to leave things status quo until they get there?
Well, it's only almost always important to say that in part of the BFAST that Marty had mentioned, T is not only time, but making sure you call 911. So we always encourage everyone, call 911, make sure that you're bringing into the patient into the hospital with medics or a critical team that knows and can take care of a patient, because unfortunately, strokes can evolve quickly, mm-hmm. and a patient can start to have symptoms that would require them to have assistance, whether it be a tube to help with breathing or whether it be additional information that we need in terms of an IV insertion or drawing blood work right away. So we do always encourage everyone to call 911 right away.
Yeah.
What is also important is when you're assessing if they could possibly have a list of all the home medications that the patient is on, because there are certain medications that would interact with the care that we'd be providing the patient once they do get to the hospital doors and get into our emergency department. We also always like to encourage, which is a huge myth for stroke, if, unlike a heart attack, if you feel that your family member, significant other, friend, whoever you're with is having a stroke, we always discourage them to take any type of aspirin. There are two different types of stroke. One is a bleeding stroke, one is a non-bleeding stroke.
Mm-hmm.
But in cases that you can't tell the difference, which we always can't unless we have a certain type of imaging that will help us for a CAT scan, we don't want you to be taking an aspirin if you have a bleeding stroke, because it's only going to make the bleeding worse. So that's one of the myths I did want to make sure to get out there during this radio show today.
Yeah, the confusion, I would think, is that for a heart attack, that's what you typically do, right?
Correct.
You take the aspirin. So, you know, we think of the big emergencies, a stroke versus cardiac arrest, and one, taking an aspirin is probably the right thing to do, or at least a help. But this one you're saying don't, because you could actually make it worse.
Absolutely. You don't know if your airway is being compromised depending on what type of stroke you're having, or
sure.
if you're having a bleeding stroke, you don't want to make it worse. So
okay.
we just encourage time to get to the hospital as soon as possible and let us take care and assess the patient in the way that we can.
Okay. Now, where do you, you know, we already got the 911 call. Mm-hmm. Marty's already sent his paramedics up there. When do you come on the scene? When do you get involved in this?
Well, as the paramedics are bringing the patient into the emergency department, what we have initiated at our hospital back in August was something called a single call activation system.
Mm-hmm.
So it allows us to call into our operator at the hospital and let them know we have a stroke patient or a possible stroke patient that has now come through the hospital doors. And when that happens, it automatically pages out myself, our CAT scan department, our neurologist on call, overhead pages, so any help that we have in the hospital will be able to come and assess and assist in what we're doing for the patient. So by having that single call activation, I become notified right away
mm-hmm.
that there's a stroke patient that have hit the doors. If we have not heard from the paramedics in the pre-hospital setting, because a lot of times, as Marty had mentioned, we also get pre-hospital notification so we can get the room prepared. We use teleneurology at our hospital, so it allows for us to get the machine into the room right away and the availability of our neurologists to come on screen.
Sure.
So I get notified right away from there and then can help with the assistance of taking care of that patient.
Now, you're cloned, right? So there's about three or four of you?
Exactly. Don't give away my secret.
So how many stroke coordinators are there?
Because
one. Okay. Now, I'm doing some quick math.
I might be able to help clear
some
of that up. Dana coordinates the care for the team within the hospital system.
Right.
So when a person comes in with stroke symptoms, the emergency department, nurse staff, we are comprised of a team of nurses, patient care technicians, unit coordinator, and a physician. And that team kind of swarms, if you will, to the patient when we know that there's a code stroke coming in.
Right.
Or, you know, if it's called after the fact, maybe we didn't know on the way in, they get there, we'll call the single activation overhead. Mm-hmm. So that team gets them registered quickly to get them on the board, because that's the way we need to be able to give anything we need to do for them. The technicians, if Marty's team has already gotten the blood sugar and all the things that go along that we've gotten, so she's coordinating that effort. Mm-hmm. Let's make sure we have a checklist. Let's make sure we check everything off so that it's all done prior to the testing that we need to get for the patient.
Right.
And it's timed. We set a clock.
Set a clock. As soon as that call comes in, you're
yes, we do.
Because time is of the essence.
Time is brain.
Time is brain.
Can we say that again?
That's called training right there.
Yeah, it is. We're a finely tuned team in the emergency department. So.
Sweet. But getting back to Dana, you do take a day off, no?
Yes. Absolutely,
okay.
And that's what makes the program so successful, because on the days that I'm not able to be there physically, mm-hmm. I also have the rest of the team that we all work together. You can't have a program running without a team. So that includes our pre-hospital, our emergency department, as Julie had said, going into the hospital setting, radiology, neurology.
So you guys have been practicing to enough that although you're always monitoring what's going on and doing post and pre and post assessment, the team knows what they're supposed to do.
Exactly. And I was just going to say, we make use of what we call stroke champions.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a certain set of nurses on various shifts who are kind of know the protocol really well, so that they can assist, even if it's not their patient at the time. They can kind of jump in and will cross over the whole department to make sure that, you know, we're doing everything possible we can as quickly as possible.
So we're avoiding the "it's not my job" routine. Right?
No, we don't have that. We don't have that.
Well,
what does that mean?
I know, but it's happened in other places. That's the part that's scary.
Sure.
And I'm glad that you guys focus on that.
As you definitely have picked up, I mean, Dana's role is as the stroke coordinator. Mm. Although she's here more than 40 hours a week, she's not here 168.
No,
she's
good.
Available 24/7 too, but she shouldn't be. But she is.
But she's looking good for somebody who's working 160 hours a week. I'll tell you that.
But the talent that she brings to the equation is to put together something that's in place 24/7,
right?
And functions at above a minimum standard. It really functions at a high standard. And then Dana has the opportunity to come in afterwards and monitor that activity.
Right.
Now, you know, let's face it, if you happen to come in when Dana's working, things, you know, probably a little bit easier for her because she's a part of the process opposed to, you know, learning about what took place. But it's a pretty well-tuned, oiled machine.
Yeah, and let's face it, if they have to ask for directions while the patient is in need of care, we're not doing too well. Right.
Correct.
If they've been trained to the point where they can just make the decisions because they've been trained to do it, then that's your goal.
Absolutely.
And just to put a little plug in there for administration, the administration has been extremely supportive of this program and moving it forward to provide us with the resources we need and the time we need for training and the encouragement. So just to put a little shout out there.
Super. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Hunter Medical Center on the air, part of Stroke Awareness Week. We'll be right back with more in just a moment.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Welcome back to the Hunterdon Medical Center on the air. It's Stroke Awareness Month, and we've been talking a little bit about the process of when somebody might feel that they've been afflicted with that system, that situation, and how they get from point A to eventually the medical center. And we heard a little bit about the coordination. Off the air, we've been already talking about the fact that it's, to be honest with you, I've heard more about how to recognize a heart attack, and there's a lot of information, but confusing information about how to recognize a stroke. So I'm hoping you guys can help me understand exactly what I should be looking for. I heard the BFAST, but I'm going to need a little more help with that. So what should we be looking for that makes me recognize that somebody is experiencing a stroke?
So what we always like to discuss is making sure that you're trying to identify an acute change or something that's happened not over a long period of time, not over 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, but something that happened within a short period of time that all of a sudden symptoms are changing.
Short as in what, hours, minutes?
Could be hours, could be minutes, could be seconds. I mean, we've had patients that have come in within 12 minutes of their symptoms. So depending on how quickly they could be recognized. Unfortunately, when we use the acronym BFAST, we try to cover as much as we can with stroke. But every stroke presents differently, although we'd like to think that they all will present the same and we can give a mold for everyone to fit into. Outside of the BFAST, of the balance, the eyesight, face, arms, or speech, we also have numbness or tingling on one side. A lot of symptoms are unilateral symptoms or symptoms affecting just one side. It can even affect your face. Like we said, the sudden onset of dizziness, cloudiness. Sometimes you feel like you're having difficulty with coordination. So when you're trying to perhaps, you know, pick up a cup of coffee in the morning and go to sip the coffee, you can't coordinate that arm to be able to actually grasp it or pick it up. So a lot of the signs and symptoms while we would like to classify them as exactly happening this way, they can be a variety of symptoms.
Some of them are masked because it's new.
Correct. And when we say speech, not only is it slurred speech, it can also be something called aphasia or a difficulty either conveying your thoughts or being able to understand what someone else is saying to you. So you might be trying to say, you know, the word 55 and you just come out 5, 5, 5, 5. You can't get the words out that you want to say. Or you can understand a conversation and you can't respond, and or vice versa, that you can't understand, but you can start a whole new conversation of what thoughts you have in your mind.
Okay. Now, I've seen posts on the world of social media. The tongue is involved? Is that what I'm...
The tongue can be involved. It can be deviated. A lot of times you can have, with eyesight, you can have it that you're looking towards one side, either the left or right side, and you can't cross across the midline. A lot of times that's indicative of a...
So that's when a doctor is doing that?
Correct. Okay. Correct, when they're doing a gaze preference. So it could be indicative of a much larger stroke. Most of the time you'll see the gaze associated with that. So there's smaller strokes, there's larger strokes, and then there's TIAs where you have these symptoms. They're transient and they come and go, and that's still considered a medical emergency because we are trying to address what are your secondary risk factors that are causing these mini strokes to occur.
TIA, from what I was, it was called to micro stroke. Is that something like what was kind of
so
described?
It's a transient ischemic attack.
Yeah,
correct.
Okay. Well, and I'm the layman. You guys are talking all the medical stuff. I'm just trying to figure out how to get through the first. And they have similar symptoms, but at a much smaller.
Correct. So they don't last as long.
Right.
But what happens is when you have someone who's had a transient ischemic attack, you have about a sevenfold chance of having another stroke with a full-blown stroke within the month.
Oh,
so those are warning signs, is what we like to
like
call
tremors. Earthquake tremors.
Right. But I think what's really important about this particular piece for the community is don't wait. If you feel that you're experiencing some of these things, don't blow it off. Don't wait. And that's
isn't that unfortunately the human condition, that you're a survivor and you can take this and it'll be better in a while.
But I just need 5 minutes.
Right.
I just need 5 minutes.
But,
yeah.
I was thinking as Dave was talking and you segued nicely, was just denial.
Yeah.
People want to deny their own, you know, symptoms because they feel in 5 minutes, I need 5 minutes to get better.
Yeah.
And often family members or people who are emotionally attached to the person also buy into that person's denial.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, geez, you know, they're probably exhausted because they were out working in the garden all day, or they just play tennis or what have you.
Right.
And they actually delay the process because they're helping to buy into the denial. That's why I think it's important that people take the time to remember to engage 911 and get some unbiased responders there who have no emotional connection to it, and they really look at it from a pure perspective, and they kind of see through all that denial that is put up and are able to really identify things for being stroke symptoms and not being dehydration or haven't eaten since yesterday or
what
cases.
So there's a question here, but it popped in my head already because Dana has already emphasized how little time we have. If I take the road I just described, I just need 5 minutes. What more risk am I taking on? How much worse is that making my potential condition?
Well, how many brain cells a minute is
right,
it?
How many
1.9 billion.
Say it again.
Neurons, 1.9 billion neurons a minute.
Per minute are lost.
And how many do I have?
Probably a lot more than that.
Well, the normal aging, you lose about 15 a year. So in about
just
7 and 15. A half minutes of a large vessel stroke or a bigger stroke, you could be losing the same amount that you would be losing in a full year.
Oh, my. Okay.
That kind of puts it in perspective.
Yeah, and that's why I was asking to give some quantification of what we're dealing with here.
And Dana will, I'm sure, go into talking about the methods of treatment, but time is of the essence so that we can get better outcomes.
Right.
So that's the why.
And that goes back to their statement before about time is brain.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, you know, you don't
only
want to
have
delay. You want to recognize it, you want to own it, and you want to treat it as promptly as possible.
Right. So there's a psychology to this too, right? I'm trying to be the macho guy. I can handle it. It's not that bad. It'll be over in a little bit. But and then there's the other people, and this happens potentially. I might be generalizing here, but the elderly population doesn't want to bother people. Yes. I don't want to bother the 911 people. Oh, the poor paramedics are coming, and they don't need to. Again, you're putting yourself at tremendous risk that
yes,
you can't
absolutely.
Do it.
Absolutely.
That's correct. Unfortunately, there still is, 50% of the people still arrive by car?
Correct.
So that means that 50% are calling 911, which, as you know, we've spoke about already, you know, we can essentially game the system by getting you identified early in the pre-hospital setting, notified at the emergency department, and get that system in place ready to receive
ready to
you.
Go.
Opposed to you say, well,
so they're losing time.
I can get to the hospital quicker by car. Yes, you can. But when you arrive there, they're going to be like, you know, starting at square one.
Right.
Whereas if you call 911, that whole ball gets kicked into play long before you even
Excellent.
Arrive at the facility.
So, Julie, how much time does it take when you get the call to amass everybody and be ready?
Well, in the emergency department, just by virtue of the department, we're pretty much ready mm-hmm. before you get there.
Yeah, but everybody's got other people they're attending.
Correct. So we have a system in place where we usually have one nurse that's a floater mm-hmm. called the T2, triage 2, second triage nurse. We have one triage nurse in the front, and then we have a clinical coordinator who coordinates the flow of where patients are going.
Right.
So it takes a matter of minutes to get the team with you
mm-hmm.
as soon as you get there.
Okay.
If it happens to be somebody who walks in, we also have what's called a nurse-driven protocol, which we just instituted last year. I'm very excited about. We don't have to wait for a doctor to assess that patient if we see those BFAST symptoms. We can call the stroke overhead from the minute you walk in.
Gotcha.
Okay, so it's minutes.
Well, but as Marty said, those minutes are important.
Yeah.
You told me it's
yep.
1.9 million
yep.
neurons I'm losing because I didn't bother to call and, and I'm driving myself or somebody's driving me there. So that's important.
Yep.
We can't afford that. Is there any confusion, Dana, between the symptoms of a heart attack and symptoms of a stroke where I might not recognize which one it is?
I don't think there's per se confusion. I just think it's easier or there has been more knowledge presented to the community on identifying or being able to identify in someone else the mm-hmm. signs and symptoms of a heart attack.
Okay.
One of the interesting facts that we know is that stroke is the fifth leading cause of death in the United States. But in New Jersey, it's still the third leading cause of death. And one of the questions that always arises in our consortium is it because we're not getting enough education out to the community, or is it too hard to identify what a stroke might look like, or are we waiting too long to actually put together the pieces to say what I'm feeling might actually be a stroke? When mm-hmm. you think about BFAST, when you think about balance, how many things can we associate balance to that we say, okay, we're just going to sleep it off, or we're just going to relax? Same thing with eyesight. Oh, I might just need to go to the eye doctor because all of a sudden I've developed this issue with not being able to see out of a quarter of my eye. You know, it might just be something to do with eyesight, or even, mm-hmm. you know, your face. A lot of times between Bell's palsy or having some type of dental work or anything that might cause arms and speech as well. So unfortunately, there's a lot of other factors that can contribute to what the signs and symptoms of a stroke might be, and that might be what's preventing the community from actually coming to the hospital in
right.
a timely manner.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is all those subsequent or those mimickers, none of them are really life-threatening in the long run. They're you know, they're issues that need to have some attention.
Mm-hmm.
But the one issue that people are trying to deny is the one that causes them the most amount of brain loss, which is the fact they're having a stroke.
Correct.
That seems to be a hard pill for most people to swallow, that they're having a major event.
Yeah.
And they want to, you know, want it to be anything else but that.
It seems to be a little bit of a Jersey stereotype. You know, again, that tough individual, but I'm also curious. I'd love to see that data to see if there's something else. Does New Jersey have? Is there a quantification of how many strokes we're having in New Jersey? We're a small state, a lot of folks. We have medical care pretty much anywhere you go, it's right there. So it shouldn't be anything that's causing us to not be able to get to the medicine. It's just we're still delayed somehow. But when you say 3 versus 5, that's a percentage? That's an actual number? What was that?
No, and that's the ranking of how.
Ranking.
Correct.
Okay. All right. So we're not paying attention, apparently. Or we're just sleeping it off.
Well, that's why we're on the radio.
That's why we're here today.
That's why.
And we're also working on other projects to get out into the community. Last year, Dana and another nurse stroke champion of mine, Eileen, went to the fair down in Flemington Fairgrounds and presented a little bit there, mm-hmm. and we're going to have another something tomorrow.
And June 2nd as well.
Okay, so there's a lot of things going on in preparation.
We're working on getting them out, getting the word out.
Mm-hmm. Right. So now there's a question here, men versus women. I was talking about the masculinity of, men are saying I can handle it, or Marty said 5 minutes, that type of thing. Is there a difference in terms of sex and whether those people are experiencing different symptoms or more susceptible?
They're not experiencing different symptoms at all. I always try to shy away from this question only because...
Well, I didn't write it. You guys did.
Women tend to live longer than men, so depending on the age group that you're looking at, if it's the earlier age group up till about the 65 to 75 range, more men have suffered from strokes than women. But once you start moving up to the 75 and older range, because there are more women that are outliving men, it tends to be that more women are suffering from strokes. But when you look at the split, it's about 54-46, so it's almost even in terms of men versus women. The symptoms are exactly the same in both, unlike a heart attack that can have different symptoms. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, depending on the location of the stroke, it can present the same or close enough to the same in a male as it can for female.
Sure. Lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Is there things that people are doing that are setting themselves up for this? That we're not really paying attention to? I mean, there's so many things that we get involved with as human beings that we're allowed to do, and we throw caution to the wind. But usually, and I've got a 20, a 21-year-old right now, so they're invincible, of course. So is there something that we make choices of early on that are setting ourselves up for more susceptibility to this?
Well, there are... modifiable risk factors that we always like to call. Of course, smoking is the number one modifiable risk factor. Mm-hmm. We do have choices in our diet as well, depending on actually going to the physician and taking care of yourself and following up. Once someone has come into the emergency department and we've diagnosed that they are having a stroke, the next question I receive is, well, now you know they've had a stroke, now what? But the whole point that we're trying to address is those secondary risk factors to prevent them from either having a stroke that's going to cause lasting deficits or preventing them from reoccurring and having another stroke. Mm-hmm. So high cholesterol, diabetes, obesity, smoking, as I had said earlier.
Yeah.
These are the top, having an irregular heartbeat or something called atrial fibrillation. So there are some modifiable and some unmodifiable, but the most important is to address and know what is your family history as well as your own history and how can you control those risk factors.
Sure.
Regular, health checks with your physician is a really good way to at least work on trying to prevent any kind of healthcare issue, really. But mm-hmm. The physician, if they find your cholesterol is high or your high blood pressure or weight is up, they're automatically going to be thinking you may be at risk for a stroke. So let's look at what we can do to modify those.
And the cholesterol threshold was just lowered, right? Is that what I just heard?
Just a little bit, yep.
So you're making a bigger hurdle now.
Yes.
But then again, with identifying people's risk factors, when you go to your physician, they can educate you about the fact that you have a higher potential to have a stroke or a heart attack and talk to you about those signs and symptoms and what that may look like. But again, this is the Northeast. I mean, there's a lot of stress in everybody's life.
Mm-hmm.
So learning to manage your stress is, I think, a key thing for anybody.
Sure.
And don't deny when you're having symptoms.
Something's happening.
I think a lot of times, strokes and heart attacks I think they are more profound to somebody in a visceral way, so they feel sicker about it. Like they know there's something more egregious happening. And I think if they can really be honest with themselves, they'll push past the denial and say, if nothing else, say, hey, you know what, go get checked out. I mean, I have this conversation responding to people's homes all the time. You mentioned earlier the tough guy at home who doesn't want to give it up. So my argument is just simply, listen, I'm asking you to just go to the hospital and spend a couple hours out of your life to get a better answer.
Right.
If you, you know, refuse to go, well, then you're going to sit home here and be wondering, you know, what really happened here.
Just and adding more stress.
Just take the time out of your life. What's the worst thing that can happen? You lose a couple hours out of your life.
Right.
And you know, most people, I think they yield to that. I mean, that's been my experience.
Sure.
And Dana will update you on what can be done, which is very exciting, to help someone who is having a stroke, especially when they're able to get to the hospital in a timely fashion.
So, Dana, now I thought I so is there something, this is something that can be done as they're experiencing these symptoms, is that right, or is it
correct? Okay. Absolutely. Go so ahead. There is a medication called TPA, or the name that we use in the medical field is Alteplase. It's a clot busting drug. So what we're thinking is happening when you're having a stroke is that if you're not having the bleeding type, which this medication is not for, This is only for the non-bleeding type, it's believed that you have some type of occlusion that's in your vessels that is blocking the blood flow and that's bringing oxygen to your brain. So One of the opportunities is a blood clot that could be the blockage that's caused there.
Right.
So we like to be able to give a medication called Alteplase or TPA that helps, that's called a clot buster, that helps to break that up so we can restore blood flow back to the brain.
Okay.
Fortunately and unfortunately, we only have a small time frame that we can administer this medication to. So it's up to 4.5 hours, 3 hours through FDA, but we also follow the American Heart, American Stroke Association guidelines, which allows us up to 4.5 hours, but only for a certain patient population to be able to give this drug. So ideally, from the time that you were last seen normal or without your symptoms to the time that we can give this medication is only 4.5 hours. The more you delay coming into the hospital, if you don't come in until 3 hours into your symptoms, Now it shortens the period of time that we can recognize and identify and give you administer this medication.
And you're not going to get it that moment. You guys are going to do some tests before we get there. So we need some lead time.
Correct. Okay. Gotcha. The golden standard is to have a door to needle time, so door to TPA administration of less than 45 minutes, and Hunterdon is well surpassed that door.
All right.
So our current time is
27 minutes.
27 minutes.
So you're almost cut that in half.
Correct.
Correct.
Nice. Very nice. Okay. Now, you threw a curveball at me. I know you've done it twice already, but I picked up on it the second time. I only knew of strokes to be because of blood clots. So what is the difference when I have a bleeding stroke versus a stroke that's caused by a blood clot?
Sure. So the ones that are caused by blood clots are called ischemic strokes, and They make up about 87 to 89%. Okay. So that's why they're most known. And those are the most areas that we can perform intervention here at Hunterdon Medical Center. Mm-hmm. We also have the bleeding strokes, which comprise about 11 to 13%. And they're either subarachnoids or intracerebral hemorrhages. Two different types of bleeding strokes. But the most important thing to know about them is that there are strokes that are causing either a burst in a blood vessel that's in your brain or an aneurysm.
Okay, aneurysm is kind of like a stroke.
Correct.
Okay.
So the biggest cause of a subarachnoid hemorrhage, that's not something caused by trauma or by someone, you know, hitting their head, Is an aneurysm.
Okay.
So they're the number one, that's the number one cause of non-traumatic strokes. And then for the intracerebral hemorrhage, it's high blood pressure.
Sure.
So when your blood is pumping through your brain, you can cause enough pressure to burst a vessel.
And you typically have a headache from that?
With the subarachnoids, you can feel like the worst headache ever of your life, correct?
Okay.
And that's something that we tend to be able to stabilize at Hunterdon, But we would transfer over to our comprehensive center that can perform more intracranial interventions.
Invasive interventions.
Correct.
We would send them to Overlook.
Right. Oh, boy, and they have to make a big trip. That's where Marty comes back again.
Well, actually, one of the rangers that we have is Atlantic Health has a helicopter.
Okay.
And we have a helipad right at the emergency department. So on days like today, we would expedite that by calling a helicopter and move you by air from our location to their location. They have, I guess in the last year, put a helipad on the top of their facility. So now you're going facility to facility, and it really gets you up there in a
right.
less than a half-hour time.
That's how we cut down from 3 to 5, right?
Correct.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're talking to these folks about Stroke Awareness Month here and learning a lot about it. We'll be right back with more of the Hunter Medical Center on the Air in just a moment.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
We're back. It's Hunter Medical Center on the Air. It's Stroke Awareness Month, and we're learning a tremendous amount about stroke symptoms, about the treatment, about trying to tackle this at a much more rapid pace, and how Hunter Medical Center has been focusing on this for quite some time to achieve just that. Because, as Julie just pointed out, it's pretty bad in New Jersey that we are still, it's the third leading cause of death in New Jersey. So New Jersey apparently is not paying attention. I don't want it to make sound dire here, but can you recover from a stroke fully? Are you always kind of a little bit broken after a stroke, or is for the most part you can recover from it and potentially stave off another attack?
You can certainly recover from it. Fully is a very hard word to mm-hmm. use, only because this is something, it's the number one cause of disability in the United States. So unfortunately, the majority of stroke patients will have some type of disability afterwards.
Because
now,
of
disability can be something that may perhaps seem small or insignificant to you, but
right.
huge to me, depending on what your profession is, what your lifestyle is. So I think the most important part is that you need to keep pushing through, go to the acute rehab, work on any deficits that you do have, because you have to put that effort in and try to recover whatever tissue is left
mm-hmm.
that has not been through cell death from.
Okay. And so the rest of it is more compensation, right?
Correct. Compensation.
Compensating for what you've lost through
Correct.
Rehab. Okay.
And Hunterdon, being the, you know, our motto is the medical home and the full circle of care, we're going to see that, you know, from the time you, you know, are pre-activated in the field to the discharge from the hospital, that you're going to see, you know, you're going to get the care you need to, to do improve as best as you can.
Correct. But as you've pointed out, and I think we've emphasized this enough, and we're going to do it one more time, is the biggest thing that's standing in the way from recovery is the patient themselves, whether they're going to buy in or not.
It's possible, yes. I mean that's, you know, that's a big part of it. It's understanding what's happening to you and then not waiting. So be fast.
Be fast.
And, you know, call.
Yeah. Okay. So we have just a few more minutes. How do people learn more about this? You had already said there was a few more endeavors that are going to be taking place for me to catch up on more information. They obviously can listen to this program ad nauseum to keep up. But where else is there going to be information for people to learn more about this?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, I'll be honest with you. I mean, it's it kind of sounds a little too easy, but just pick up your smartphone, pick up your computer and Google.
Yeah.
You know, signs and symptoms of stroke or you know, stroke. Just, you know, you put in anything about it. There's just endless amounts of information to be read. Mm-hmm. That's one asset. Dana, I think, is going to tell you about some of the stuff we have going on at the medical center here more locally.
Dana?
Absolutely. So because we follow the American Heart, American Stroke Association guidelines, not only can you go right directly to their website, but we also have a section at our Hunterdon homepage as well that gives the opportunity right when you go through the internet and go onto our website. So there's a lot of information on there. Right. We have some websites that you can connect to that will help stroke.org. To allow for further education and information. I know one of our goals is to start a community stroke support group. Mm-hmm. So that's one of our visions for the next coming year. So that way we can help support the Hunterdon community, not only for our stroke survivors, but also for their families.
Perhaps we can do an Ask Dana on the website, Facebook page.
Yeah, because she's got free time. She's got tons of free time.
Yeah, I know. She's a wealth of knowledge, though. We're happy to have her.
No, it's obvious that she's making a tremendous impact. And we're learning. I'm just learning a heck of a lot just sitting here talking to you folks about it. So I guess the last thing, it's stroke awareness. What's the message that hopefully we've gotten across to everybody?
Be fast.
Right. I would say don't deny and call 911.
And time is brain, because time there's never brain. A stroke lecture without remembering that time is brain.
There you go.
Only organ that can't be transplanted yet.
Yet. Yes. We're working on it. Appreciate having you guys on. Thank you so much for the information, and looking forward to bringing you guys back to talk more about stroke awareness. And hopefully next time we talk, it'll move down on the charts for us in New Jersey.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
All right, that's Hunter Medical Center on the air. We're signing off. We'll be back. Hot and Hunterdon is up next right after the news and the weather.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
USA Radio News.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo today laid out all the atrocities that are taking place in the Middle East and how Iran has their fingerprints on each of them. Secretary of State Pompeo then had a strong message for the Iranian regime.
The sting of sanctions will be painful if the regime does not change its course from the unacceptable and unproductive path it has chosen to one that rejoins the League of Nations. These will indeed end up being the strongest sanctions in history when we are complete.
There's been talk that there's a trade deal worked out between the United States and China. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin moments ago was talking outside the White House about that potential deal.
It is a framework agreement. It is an agreement. Secretary Ross has to go over and turn that into a signed piece of paper with companies. As I've described, this is not a government-to-government purchase order, but we have an agreement.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
So here's a great question. How much would you save if you joined MediShare for your health care program? The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. You might save more. Tammy left a major company and needed a new way ahead for her family. She'd heard about the savings with MediShare, but was wondering about the network of providers.
Once we started the program, I have not had to switch one doctor for myself or for my kids. So all the doctors that we were previously with were all in MediShare.
And she says the process has been fantastic.
I got off the phone and I was like, that's what it should be like. It was a pleasurable experience. An encouraging experience at that.
MediShare might be just the thing you're looking for your family, your budget. Use the savings for other things. Why not get your questions answered? Find out how much you can save. You can call right now. 833-